So I guess this morning I can start off with that old adage that many are called but few are chosen. So you guys have chosen to come today. Everyone was invited, but thank you for coming out this morning. I'm really excited to share the data that I have today with some work I've been doing with differential scanning calorimetry to try to detect change in soil organic matter with respect to energetic properties over relatively short periods of time. So I'm asking a basic question about litter inputs, both qualitative and quantitative, and changes to site fertility. And can we detect changes to soil organic matter pools at different levels of carbon, at same levels of carbon related to those treatments? So specifically, I'll be talking about the reduction of diversity of litter inputs with the application of herbicide. So reducing understory competition and reducing inputs of understory vegetation. Increasing both the quantity and quality of litter through fertilization of the site with no other treatments, and then a combination of those two to see if we can decipher the effects that those treatments have on soil carbon pools. So you guys, most of you have seen the Garden of Eden study multiple times, so we won't go into too much detail, but it was designed to look at the site factors and fertility factors that enhance or restrict growth in ponderosa pine in California. Today I'll be talking about two sites, the Whitmore site and the Feather Falls site, which ended up being a kind of a nice pairing because of their fertility and their soil properties. I won't be going into the soil properties today, but there's definitely going to be some interesting discussion of that in the future. It's a randomized, complete randomized block design with, I'll be talking about four treatments: the control, an herbicided treatment, a fertilizer treatment, and that combination. You can see that there's a nice difference in the site index of these two sites driven by rainfall. And then that plays out really nicely in the treatments with a range from very, very poor growth in the control, so a lot of competition from shrubs and understory, through vastly greater growth. And that's not the point of today's discussion. We'll be talking about the inputs, not the growth so much. So to get samples, we took out a geoprobe and we sampled and took cores to 2 meters in depth. And we took two from each of the three replicate blocks. Pardon me. So as you can see here, we went into the forest with this machine and pounded this thing into the ground and got cores. Brought those back to the lab, segmented them into 10 centimeter depth increments. Today we'll be talking about just the top three, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, and 20 to 30. And then we analyze those for CN and DSC, and we analyze them with calorimetry and then a variety of other things that won't be talked about today. So for those of you that know about calorimetry or don't, I'll give you guys a short review. Calorimetry is essentially a thermochemical fractionation of a sample. It's used broadly in material science and in mineralogy, so it's used in both inorganic and organic systems. It's used primarily as a way to detect purity and phase change, but it also is used as a way to detect mixtures and combinations. It's a very nice, it's one of the oldest analytical techniques, basically heating something and seeing what happens. And in this case, you can really control the heating rate and the atmosphere at which you're putting the sample under that heating. And you can measure energetic properties, mass loss, and then evolved gas. Today we'll be focusing on the energetics. This is a typical thermogram. This is the kind of information you would get back. Temperature is on the x-axis, and all my figures will be from about 150 degrees to 650 degrees, and the y-axis being the energy metric, in this case watts per gram. You can do joules, you can do any energy metric. The current paradigm with calorimetry is that there's been some other work with NMR and fractionation and run of analysis on these fractions to say that they've made this correlation to the three pools of the common mixing model that we generally use. So the idea is that from 200 to 350 degrees is kind of a labile, light fraction, and carbohydrate-rich turnover, rapid turnover pool. From 350 to 500 is this recalcitrant, slower turnover pool with conceptually complex structures and complexes, and then kind of the longer organometallic or mineral bound carbon and black carbon out here that turns over much slower. So I think that one of the problems with that is, yeah, that's all well and good, but you're taking this information rich approach and you're narrowing all those measurements down into these broad ranges, which doesn't give you much sensitivity to detect change. So just for example, the way we run our machine, we're measuring 20 times per second. So you take that over a broad range, you might take 1,000 measurements or 1,500 measurements and lumping it into one metric, which seems kind of foolish. So for today, we'll be talking about further subdividing the data, in this case into temperature bins of 50 degrees centigrade, so 200 to 250, 250 to 300, 300, 350. And because of the nature of the research site in the randomized block design, then I can use basic statistics to compare these bins very clearly. So I'm going to show you three slides that will kind of give you an idea of the data that I'm going to present, because I don't think many of you have seen what I'm doing. So I've taken all six samples. So this is one of the sites, the surface soil for the control treatment. And I've used my calorimeter and run these samples. And I've taken them and created a mean with a confidence interval, so a mean metric or a mean distribution of this data. And then I've taken those for the four treatments, as you'll see here, control, herbicide, fertilizer, and the combination, and put them in a panel graph so you can compare them visually. And then at the bottom of each panel graph, you'll see the mean carbon content for those samples at that treatment depth combination. So then to make these bins, I've taken and just subdivided that 50 degree region, summed the individual distribution segment, and then created a box plot of that group of samples. And then because of the experimental design, I can do a NOVA on each bin and look for differences in the total amount of energy stored in that region. And so same kind of setup, you'll see a panel figure. Each one of these box plots represents 50 degrees of that individual sample summed. And then obviously the stars represent where something's significantly different than the control. And then to try to actually compare them one-to-one, I've done a difference metric where I take the treatment mean, the mean distribution from the treatment, and subtracted the control from it. So any data that's above the zero line, it means that it's energetically enriched compared to the control at certain parts in the distribution, and below zero would mean it's depleted. So I'm going to go through the two sites. The Feather Falls site, remember, was highly productive. And it's because it's so productive, it's a little more variable. So there's not a lot of significant difference in the carbon numbers because of the variability in the amount of carbon, and especially with certain plots that are just way off the scale. But the general theme that I want you guys to appreciate is that you'll start to see across the sequence is that the fertilizer, where we've increased the quality and the quantity of litter, we start to see an increase in this labile front end of the distribution. And in this case, we actually see a significant difference in this higher temperature, more stable region of the distribution, as well as this kind of backslide down into that recalcitrant region, right? On an aside, keep your eye on this box. For some reason at this site, the combination of the herbicide and fertilizer seems to be stripping the carbon out of the profile, and I have yet to really be able to explain that clearly. But the general take-home message you'll see across all these figures is that the herbicide treatment, where we've reduced the quality of litter, and in conceptually the quantity, the energetic properties have become very narrow and actually depleted compared to the control in almost every case. And so that comes up pretty clearly with this difference metric, right? This first box is the herbicide, fertilizer, and the combination. So in this case, at the same level of carbon, essentially, you get vastly different energetic profiles for those levels of carbon, with the fertilized treatment having a considerably greater amount of energy stored in that sample across the entire profile. And with this metric, you can really, it actually starts to pop out some of the information a little more clearly. I want to point out this little dog leg right here. As we go to the subsequent depths, it's where the dehydroxylation of goethite and gibbsite is. And you start to see that as the carbon content decreases, but the fertilizer treatment actually masks that endotherm because there's so much new carbon coming into the system that it actually covers up that endotherm. And on this other side of both sites, this is the region where kaolinite dehydroxylates. So you see this big, steep endotherm, but the fertilizer treatment, the amount of new carbon at the same levels of carbon, right, is actually covering up and hiding, masking that endotherm, which is really pretty exciting when you think about the implications of that with respect to turnover and carbon. I didn't show this mid one. I think I got the bottom of the A and the top of the AB since I did by depth, so it was a little more variable, but the same kind of trend starts to hold up. And like I said, notice that herbicide by fertilizer treatment. I mean, it's just the carbon's going away, and so is the energy. I don't know why yet, but we've got some X-ray diffraction data and some other stuff that we're doing to try to answer that question. But general trend, fertilizer seems to be pumping the system up. both at basically the same levels of carbon, and the reduced litter treatment seemed to be actually depressing the system. And probably the most exciting figure that I have is this one and the other one at this depth, because here's where you can really see, here's that Gibbsite endotherm and here's that kaolite endotherm, and this fertilized treatment at lower carbon levels actually masks that endotherm and that endotherm clearly. And I think that has a lot of implications for the way that we're actually looking at these pools, you know, and kind of the turnover of carbon, but that's for later. Same kind of story. The fertilized treatment, and you know, with this difference metric, it really makes these spots where they're vastly different stick out. So this is effectively the carbon that filled that hole right there, which is really kind of interesting when you consider it. So Whitmore, remember, is kind of the more marginal site, and the treatments kind of stick out even more. The influence of the fertilizer and the influence of the increased litter actually significantly increase the carbon pool at the sites, both for the fertilized and for the fertilized without the with the herbicide, which is kind of interesting because then you can see the actual influence of the fertilizer altering the carbon pool and making it more energetically rich. So the idea that the bonds that are in that carbon pool is actually more favorable potentially for the microbial population down the road. So it'll be really fun to see what this looks like in 20 more years. Does that fertilizer effect stay in there and can we still detect it? So in this case, that same is true. The herbicide seems to deplete the system. And we have some isotope data from a labeled litter study that has the same story, that the removal of the understory litter and forcing the system to eat the pine only seems to really, like, you see the distribution and the confidence interval, it seems to really narrow that system down and start to kind of bottleneck it, because we think the microbes are going after the carbon in the native pool and not the litter because they don't want to eat that stuff. But in this case, you know, these are both significant, more carbon, more energy. That's not as interesting as some of the more refined details. It comes up very clearly. You see that you get this depletion in this system with a real nice signal here at that more stable peak. You really get a reduction in the energetic storage in that region of the distribution. Same story, but you know, starting to kind of transition to the lower depth. And then once again, I think this is probably the most telling figure that I have in this presentation, is that you see this slug of carbon and slug of energy that's coming into the system by the fertilizer treatment. And we can't tell if this is from litter or from, you know, processes coming through the soil, but potentially this is the nitrogen and the other elements being, you know, it's only 20 centimeters, so it's not far to go. But you're actually seeing carbon being pumped into the system here and at the same level of carbon, essentially, which I think is very novel and interesting in and of itself. And it shows very clearly in the difference. So I would argue that not all organic matter is the same, and I think I show that very clearly in this data, and there'll be subsequent data to come. And treatment matters, and just because we can't measure a significant effect of the carbon pool on mass, that there are other things going on in that system that we aren't maybe detecting. And I think this method is a really interesting way to come at it, both from a mass and energy flux approach, as well as a standardizing method to be able to measure across sites, because you're using temperature, you're not using some extractable or some other pool, you're measuring the distribution of energy in that system. Herbicide seems to greatly reduce and deplete the energetic storage in the system. And like I said, we have a really nice labeled litter study, and we're coupling an IRMS to this machine, so we're actually going to be able to trace the isotope into that thermal distribution and see where it's going. The fertilizer, the enrichment of the quality and the quantity of that that site seems to really elevate the quality and the energetic storage of that site. And from the standpoint of how that affects the microbial population, we don't have that yet, but that's obviously the direction you're going. Like, what is that higher quality litter and higher quality organic matter doing to the system in general? And then kind of interestingly enough, that in some cases the fertilizer has an effect to increase it, and in the case of the Whitmore site, it's probably more due to the fact that it's a kind of a when you look at the x-ray data, it's definitely got a lot of short-range order minerals, where the other site is on quartzy material and it doesn't have that short-range character, so I think a lot of the nutrients are actually blown out the bottom of the system. But I think it's a very interesting way to look at organic matter, and then especially in this coming bioenergy push that we're all going to, here's a way for us to quantify the black box with respect to energy that we're looking at compared to the energy that we're taking off the site. And with that, I'd like to thank my co-authors, my peers that have helped me greatly, both with the analytical part as well as the processing. And all this stuff was done outside the proprietary software, and it took a lot of learning to figure out how to code it, and then some labor and my facilities. Thank you.